Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Calculation of Time from the Atom, Chapter 11 from Canto 3. We're going to be discussing verses 15 through 33. The section we just covered was discussing time, space, continuum, and the units of space in the form of the atom, the indivisible, smallest form of material existence, and the movement of the sun past one atom is, and so many other atoms, and calculations of time. And the last verse we read, text 14, there are five different names for the orbits of the sun, moon, stars, and luminaries in the firmament. And they each have their own samvatsara. Samvatsara is one full rotation of the sun. So now, this morning, the circles get bigger. That was like really small, up to 15 days, and 2 times 15 days is a month. 2 fortnights is a month. 2 pakshas comprise 1 month, and 12 months comprise 1 calendar year, or 1 full orbit of the sun. Samvatsara. That is the way of control, the controlling measure of eternal time. So, text 15. O Vidura, the sun enlivens all living entities with his unlimited heat and light. He diminishes the duration of life of all living entities in order to release them from their illusion of material attachment. And he enlarges the path of elevation to the heavenly kingdom. He thus moves in the firmament with great velocity, and therefore everyone should offer him respects once every 5 years with all ingredients of worship. No purport. Four things are mentioned: enlivening all living entities with heat and light, unlimited distribution of heat and light. Second, he diminishes the duration of life in order to release them from their illusion. That's what the passing of duration of life is for, by the way. Enlarging the path of elevation to the heavenly kingdom, mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, when the sun moves in the northerly direction. That's the auspicious time for the souls to leave following the path of the sun. And he is to be worshipped with all ingredients of worship once every 5 years. No explanation. Vatsara Pancha Kaya. Vidura then said, I now understand the durations of the residence of the Pita planets and heavenly planets, as well as that of the human beings. Now, kindly inform me of the duration of life of those greatly learned living entities who are beyond the range of a kalpa. What's a kalpa? Day of Brahma. So, at the end of the day of Brahma, there's a partial devastation. So, Pitri, Deva, and Manusha, men. So, the earth, it's later Prabhupada is using this. The Pitri Loka is in the region of Bhuvar Loka. Bhuvar and Svarga Lokas. So different terminology is used. Those three we're more accustomed to hearing, but Manusha, mankind, Pitriloka, Svargaloka. Those regions are destroyed at the end of Brahma's night. And he's asking, what about those that are above that region? Can you describe the influence of time upon them? Purport. The partial dissolution of the universe that takes place at the end of Brahma's day does not affect all the planetary systems, the planets of highly learned living entities, like the sages Sanaka, the four Kumaras, and Bhrigu are not affected by the dissolutions of the millenniums. All the planets are of different types, and each is controlled by a different Kala Chakra, or schedule of eternal time. Prabhupada keeps using these terms in different ways, so it's like hard to keep track. Kala Chakra, the wheel of time. Eternal time. Relative time. So it's eternal time acting in different regions or different spheres in different ways. The time of the Earth planet is not applicable to other more elevated planets. Therefore, Vidura herein inquires about the duration of life on other planets. And he continues one more question. O spiritually powerful one, you can understand the movements of eternal time, which is the controlling form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because you are a self-realized person, you can see everything by the power of mystic vision. And in the purport, Prabhupada is saying the devotee doesn't have to undergo yoga practice to get mystic yoga siddhis. By the grace of Krishna from within, the devotee can do things that ordinary persons can't do, and whatever mystic yogis can do, just by being empowered directly by Krishna. The devotees of Lord Sri Krishna can very easily understand the science of Krishna, as well as the situation of the material and spiritual creations without difficulty. So Maitreya's response, text 18. Oh, Vidura, the four millenniums, yugas, and then there's so four yugas. The four millenniums are called the Satya, Treta, Dvarapa, and Kali yugas. The aggregate number of years of all of these combined is equal to 12,000 years of the demigods. So follow the math. Purport. The years of the demigods are equal to 360 years of humankind. So you multiply 12,000 times 360, that's how many Earth years? So 4,320,000, that's where that number comes from. 12,000 is the duration of the four yugas cycling once. 12,000 times 360, so that means 360 years here pass when 1 year passes there. So whatever 12,000 times, so it's 4,320,000. That's called the yuga including here. The years of the demigods are equal to 360 years of humankind. As will be clarified in the subsequent verses, 12,000 of the demigods' years, including the transitional periods, which are called yuga sandhyas, between satya, treta, there's this transitional periods, overlap. Very important in astronomy, and very difficult for me to understand how it works. Text 19. The duration of the Satya millennium equals 4,800 of the demigod years. Then you subtract 12 from 4,800 and you get 3,600. Then you subtract 12, you get 2,400. You subtract 12 and you get 1,200 for Kali Yuga. And to get it on human numbers, just multiply by 360. One of the things that I like about the symmetry of all of this is, if you start with Kali Yuga, then Dwarapa Yuga, then Treta Yuga, and Satya Yuga, you add, so you can do it with demigod years or human years. With demigod years, it's 1,200, you add 12, or it's 1,200, so it's 2,400, you add 12, 3,600, add 12, it's 4,800. But to get the combination, it's times 10. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 is 10. So 1,200 times 10. Make it really easy. Text 20. The transitional periods, sandhyas, before and after every millennium, which are a few hundred years, as aforementioned, are known as yuga sandhyas, or conjunctions of the two millenniums, according to the expert astronomers. In those periods, all kinds of religious activities are performed. Text 21. O Vidura, in the Satya millennium, mankind is properly and completely maintained. In the Satya millennium, mankind properly and completely maintained the principles of religion. But in other millenniums, religion gradually decreased by one part as irreligion was proportionally admitted. So many times Prabhupada would refer to this without giving the scriptural reference, and here's the scriptural reference. One quarter, one quarter, one quarter. Religion is diminished. Text 22. Outside of the three planetary systems, Svarga, Marcha, and Patala, now he's not using the same Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svarga. So it's, anyway, it's the systems that are destroyed during the night of Brahma. Outside of the three planetary systems that are destroyed during the night of Brahma, the four yugas multiplied by 1,000 comprise one day on the planet of Brahma. It was giving these little tiny increments of time, and then bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger cycles of time. So the above the planets that are destroyed at the night of Brahma, here's the duration of the life or the day of Brahma. Four yuga cycles times 1,000. A similar period comprises a night of Brahma in which the creator of the universe goes to sleep. Purport. When Brahma goes to sleep in his nighttime, the three planetary systems below Brahmaloka are all submerged in the water of devastation. In his sleeping condition, Brahma dreams about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and takes instruction from the Lord for the rehabilitation of the devastated area of space. Sweet dreams. Text 23. After the end of Brahma's night, the creation of the three worlds begins again in the daytime of Brahma, and they continue to exist throughout the life durations of 14 consecutive Manus, or fathers of mankind. So now what he's saying is, during the day of Brahma, there's 14 Manus. In the purport, just one sentence says there's a, at the end of the life of each Manu, there are shorter dissolutions also. So we heard that there's three kinds, now we're hearing there's a fourth. It's another cycle, partial, shorter dissolutions, shorter of duration. Each and every Manu, text 24, enjoys a life a little more than 71 sets of four millenniums. So if there's 14 Manus for every day of Brahma, 14 divided into 1,000 yuga cycles is 71 plus a fraction. That's the duration of their day. It's the duration of their rule and the duration of their day. And then there's the sandhis that make the buffer between the yuga cycles. Purport. The duration of life of a Manu comprises 71 sets of four millenniums as described in the Vishnu Purana. The duration of life of one Manu is about, plus or minus, 852,000 years in the calculation of the demigods, or in the calculation of human beings, multiply that by 360. 360,720,000 years. Old man, buddy. Okay. Text 25. After the dissolution of each and every manu, the next manu comes in order, along with his descendants, who rule over the different planets. But the seven famous sages and demigods like Indra and their followers, such as the Gandharvas, all appear simultaneously with Manu. That is, every Manu there's a new administration. And they rule different planets, and you know, they just take charge of where the previous Manus left off. And then there's this Sandhi period in between Manus. And not only between Manus, between the Yugas. Text 26. In the creation, during Brahma's day, the three planetary systems, Svarga, Marcha, and Patala, revolve. And the inhabitants, including the lower animals, human beings, demigods, and pitas, appear and disappear in terms of their fruitive activities. Again, this is like Prabhupada's comment about extinction of species or evolving of species. Like, it just doesn't fit with the Vedic model. In each and every text 27, in each and every chain of Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears by manifesting his internal potency in different incarnations as Manu. It's one of the types of avatars, Manvantara avatar, and others. Thus he maintains the universe by discovered power, no purport. But the Sanskrit is udita paurusha. Udita is discovering. Paurusha is divine potencies. No explanation. Text 28. At the end of the day, it's the day of Brahma. Under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges in the darkness of the night. By the influence of eternal time, the innumerable living entities remain submerged in that dissolution, and everything is silent. Report. This verse is an explanation of the night of Brahma, which is the effect of the influence of time. In touch with an insignificant portion of the modes of material nature in darkness. The dissolution of the three worlds is effected by the incarnation of darkness, Rudra, represented by fire of eternal time, which blazes over the three worlds. These three worlds are known as Bhu, Bhuvar, and Sva, parentheses, Patala, Marcha, and Swarga. The innumerable living entities merge into that dissolution, which appears to be the dropping of the curtain of the scene of the Supreme Lord's energy, so everything becomes silent. So destruction, night, dissolution, merging, these are influences of an insignificant portion of the modes of material nature in darkness. affected or influenced by time. Text 29. When the night of Brahma ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight, and the sun and the moon are without glare, just as in due course of the ordinary night. Purport. It is understood that the glare of the sun and moon disappear from the sphere of the three worlds, but the sun and the moon themselves do not vanish. They appear in the remaining portion of the universe, which is beyond the sphere of the three worlds. The portion in dissolution remains without sun rays or moon glow. It all remains dark and full of water, and there are indefatigable winds, as explained in the following verses. The part that's clear is the sun during the night of Brahma doesn't become extinguished. At the end of the life of Brahma, the sun is withdrawn. And so the sun is still burning, but just not illuminating during the night of Brahma. So it's illuminating the upper regions, but not this region. But the moon part, that's not clear. Because it's a heavenly planet, but other heavenly planets are also inundated. So, I don't understand that one. Text 30. The devastation takes place due to this is the night of Brahma, that devastation. Due to the fire emanating from the mouth of Sankarsha, and thus great sages like Bhrikkhu and other inhabitants of Maharloka transport themselves to Janaloka, being distressed by the warmth of the blazing fire which rages through the three worlds below. So, Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Swargaloka. Above that, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. So just below, at the bottom of the top four, it's too hot, so they go to the next one up, Janaloka. Text 31. At the beginning of the devastation, all the seas overflow and hurricane winds blow very violently. Thus, the waves of the seas become ferocious, and in no time at all, the three worlds are full of water. The Supreme Lord, the Personality Godhead, lies down in the water on the seat of Ananta with his eyes closed. And the inhabitants of Janaloka planets offer their glorious prayers unto the Lord with folded hands, headed by Bhrikkhu. Thus, the process of the exhaustion of the duration of life exists for every one of the living beings, including Lord Brahma. One's life endures for only 100 years in terms of the times in the different planets. I'm going to read the last paragraph of the purport of text 33. Every living being lives for 100 years in terms of the times in different planets for different entities. These 100 years of life are not equal in every case. The longest duration of 100 years belongs to Brahma. But, although the life of Brahma is very long, it expires in course of time. Brahma is also afraid of his death, and thus he performs devotional service to the Lord, just to release himself from the clutches of the illusory energy. Animals, of course, have no sense of responsibility, but even humans, who have developed a sense of responsibility, while away their valuable time without engaging in devotional service to the Lord, they live merrily, unafraid of impending death. This is the madness of human society. The madman has no responsibility in life. Similarly, a human being who does not develop a sense of responsibility before he dies is no better than a madman who tries to enjoy material life very happily without concern for the future. It is necessary that every human being be responsible in preparing himself for the next life. Even if he has a duration of life like that of Brahma, the greatest of all living creatures within the universe. The terminology 100 years is explicitly being applied to Lord Brahma, who lives for 100 years, but his year is calculated in a different way. Not by, well, in our years are of much shorter duration than his years. Our years are calculated by the movements of the sun once, from northern to southern and back to northern again, or one full cycle. And the same language is appropriate, at least he's applying it this way, for the 100 years of an insect. It's not, you know, 100 of our years, but it's 100 years on a relative scale. So the language here depends upon the position, or as we were saying yesterday, the embodiment of the living being and their relative position. I mean, so insects that live here, the sun still moves in the course of, you know, 1 year of our calculation. So that doesn't change the movement of the sun in 1 year by our calculation for an insect or some other living entity of shorter life duration. Let's say a dog or a cat lives for, you know, by our calculation, so many years, 12 years or whatever that life expectancy of such an animal. But that's relative to them. That's their 100 years. Going back to something that was said previously, in the creation of the different species, that's like Brahma's, the three types of Brahma's creation. So they're the nature of the below the human beings, the two cloven hoofed animals and the one hoofed animals, the characterization was that they understand things by smell, and based upon that, that's their food, and they don't have the capacity to see or conceive of or think beyond that, like, you know, the purpose of their existence or something. So humans that live that way, they're no better, that have the faculty but don't use it. They misuse it for creating situations for sense gratification. So it's from a Vedic perspective, we say it one way, it's condemned, and for another perspective, it's so unfortunate. And from our perspective, we should choose thoughtfully, wisely, properly, guided by scripture, to ask that question and get the proper answer. What's the purpose? What's the proper use of time? What's the proper use of the human form? What's the proper use of the faculty that have been endowed with? And not occasionally, like when it hurts or we're troubled or something, some calamity, and we start asking that question. And the calamity's over, we go back to being animals again. A life simply of satisfying the tongue and the genital and building life around that one, and that subtler forms of the same thing, like something that accompanies those two. Call it civilization. Put a bow and sprinkle some perfume on it. Call it civilization. That's not what human life is. And that's what this purport is saying. So our cycle of 100 years in the human form of life as a mission, as designed by the Creator. And it's a life of responsibility. The responsibility is to get release from this force of time that's impelling, keeps moving, relentlessly moving, and destroying and creating and maintaining and then destroying, and different cycles of time depending upon the guna and karma of the living entity, just continuously going through that. Knowledge helps detachment. It doesn't guarantee it, because we can have knowledge and still be attached. But if properly applied, then it's the wake up or it's impetus to use this human form wisely in a directed manner. Such as science, like time and space and the universe and the cycles of the universe and that this isn't the end of the detail. Something that I've often appreciated about Vedic way of life is like it's like an ocean that you can't find the bottom to it. Take anything. Take medicine, take music, take math, take history. You know, pick one off the shelf and start going. And you can go and you go and you go and you go and you can't find the bottom. Like Lord Brahma trying to find his source of his existence. You can't find the bottom. Even just in one branch of knowledge. Who can know everything that there is to know about anything within the field of Vedic wisdom? Like the devotees that have been working on the Vedic planetarium. That's one branch of knowledge, you know, astronomy, Vedic astronomy. It's not even astrology, just astronomy. And like there's teams of multiple PhDs, and like one devotee has her PhD in astrophysics and another PhD in something else, and you know they're working on this, and you know what the Madhvas say and what the Sri Vaishnavas say and the great acharyas and those lines, and you know, Western astronomy and the fifth canto and Mahabharata, and there's symmetry in it all, but how does it all fit together? And like they have the assignment to put it together. Time. I mentioned that Sariputta was exploring and making wrote a book on making presentations on time. He made a presentation at the Festival of Inspiration some years back, and I asked him and he gave me the PowerPoint. I looked at the PowerPoint and it's just like scratching my head, because all these charts, mathematical charts and graphs, and because he's a mathematician, to understand and to explain time. And from our perspective, it's trying to understand it, but Brahma not only understood it, but he used it to make all this different parts of creation. How intelligent is Brahma? And where did he get his knowledge from? From the Supreme Lord who's enjoying in Vrindavan. For those rebellious living entities, he gives them something for them to do. The cover picture is Ananta with fire coming from his mouths. So sometimes it's said that Lord Shiva is the destroyer, but we read that the fire has some relationship with Lord Shiva. The dissolution of the three worlds is effected by the incarnation of darkness, Rudra, represented by the fire of eternal time, which blazes over the three worlds. So the fire of eternal time emanates from the mouth of Anantashesh. And Rudra is that fire, or the fire. Rudra is represented by the fire of eternal time. So like, he's doing his dance with his, this is the ultimate devastation, his playing on his din din drum and dancing wildly. Or dissolves in that ocean and then comes out of the ocean and assembled by Lord Brahma in the scheduled movements of time. So time has its creating, time has its destroying, time has its apparent maintaining feature. Phases of time. Okay, any discussion?
Maharaj, the purpose of creation, material creation, is that material creation is a collective desire of the living entities.
And you use the word purpose.
Yes.
Then you said collective desire.
Oh, that's one purpose.
It's not, no, a purpose is Lord Vishnu's providing an opportunity for the living entities to try to fulfill their desire. That's one purpose.
And the purpose of destruction.
Oh, there's another purpose, and the purpose is, the second purpose is, as we were hearing, to help correct them so they can understand this isn't going to work. And the purpose of destruction? You're asking about what's the purpose of destruction?
Right.
You're staying.
Yes, Guru.
Speak. So speak a whole sentence.
How do the people in three modes, three different modes, perceive the purpose of the destruction actually?
That's an interesting question. How does the person in the mode of goodness, the person in passion, the person in ignorance perceive what is the purpose of destruction? That's your question? I don't know if they really understand the purpose of destruction. It's just like interfering with their sense gratification. There's like, you know, they just want to put the brakes on. Their experience, we heard, even up to Lord Brahma, is fear. That's described very brilliantly by Sanatana Goswami and Bhakti Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So there's a fear of death, that there's a sense of loss, because what I have, the illusion that I have, will be lost with death, and wanting to hold on to that. So there's a sense of fear, of loss of something, of my existence or what I have, one or the other, me or mine. But the purpose of that, their sense of the purpose of that, I don't know if they have even contemplation of the purpose of that. Like, let's say, an average person. That what? How do they think of death? That's a loss, a dissolution. What's the purpose of death? I don't think there's any thought about what the purpose of death is. Just avoiding it, or postponing it, or trying to depend to pretend it won't happen. But not a sense of purpose. I can't think of a sense of purpose, what they might consider.
I was thinking about this saturation with the mode of goodness, like I am okay.
Well, that's not necessarily mode of goodness.
Oh, sorry.
Ignorance, okay. I'm okay. Anything else?
When you are saying that four types of yugas also will be there in heavenly planets, so like demigods are the control and managing authority for these things going on in this world, Manas. So I'm kind of wondering, like, they also have Kali Yuga, because, you know, they will also get influenced by Kali Yuga like that, although like they are in this role of man.
It's not clear to me whether it's yes or no. Clear to anybody else here? What's being described is the life of Manu, and from our perspective, how many yuga cycles are completed through the life of Manu. But whether in the life of Manu and the personalities who are in the heavenly planets, the controlling demigods who are under the reign of a particular Manu, if they are experiencing the cycle of four yugas or not. They may be, they may not be, it's not clear to me. Yes?
One other question.
You have something, wait a minute.
I mean, I didn't hear that directly, but something that I heard is how in the heavenly planets, like, it's uninterrupted enjoyment and there's actually no suffering, really speaking. So I didn't hear in terms of Kali Yuga, but just this, that how there's this uninterrupted enjoyment. And so when death comes, then it's like
traumatic.
Very traumatic, because there's no chance for preparing oneself for any sense of compassion. They don't seem to have even that sense of temporality of whatever they're experiencing. But then it's, I mean, also for them, the demigods are aware of the Supreme Personality of God. And I wonder how that works, because and then they offer prayers also that they want to.
And they have Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
On the heavenly planets, even, you know, larger, more robust Bhagavatam.
And then they even offer prayers to come in the human form of life and so on.
So you're not answering his question, you're raising another question.
I guess it's like a comment combined with a question.
Not a good situation. the sense that I have is that it's something like, it's not like scripture describes it this way, but it's something like someone who becomes very wealthy and they go on a vacation. And when they're on a vacation, they're not thinking about anything other than enjoying. There's their piety and their fruits of their piety, and they're just enjoying until their funds run out and their vacation's over, and then they come back and, you know, go to work. Something like that. They're not thinking of higher thought. But because they're pious, they, you know, there's some features of some things that are, they're not indulging in gross impiety other than nalakubhira and mani griva and things like that. But, you know, they're engaging in pious activity. And but the mood of enjoyment is so strong, the potential of enjoyment is so strong, and the mood of enjoyment is so strong that they just indulge themselves. And my thoughts also go to what the devotees who were preaching in Russia before there was religious freedom. Prabhupada describes that even to find vegetables, Shyamasundara had to spend hours, like there was such depravity. And for what reason, intentional or unintentional, there was depravity. And during that period of time, Krishna consciousness spread very quickly. And then Indradyumna Maharaj was describing to me, it's changed. It used to be, you know, different. And now when he goes, it's like the people, it's not the same. The interest is less, and their interest is less because now there's freedom. Freedom means sense gratification. So there's more accessible what was before artificial or whatever, more constraints of sense gratification. Now that there's more abundant sense gratification, spiritual interest has covered. So it's the same people just indulging in sense gratification. So indulgence in sense gratification on the heavenly planets dulls spiritual inclination. although they're very pious, they have accessibility to high grades of piety that they're indulging in sense gratification too much. They're dulled by that. Something like that. Indra having his Indra festival on Indra Loka and completely ignoring his spiritual master. He has access to Brahaspati. And just like cavalier, because of enjoying mood. And that enjoying mood then causes foolish activity. Something else? Something else?
Yeah, one question was like, we are demigods, right? Took nectar and they live forever. What is that duration?
It's not forever, it's long.
Yeah, longer.
Yes?
Good Maharaj, for this whole material universe, that is 14 planetary systems, there is one sun, right?
Oh boy. there's one way of saying yes, and there's one way of saying no. Which one would you like?
Now, the reason I'm asking is that when Krishna and Arjuna, they go to Mahavishnu to get the sons of the Brahmana, I read that it was all dark and Krishna releases the chakra and
yes.
The light. So I was just wondering, where is the darkness? I mean, if the material universe is, the sun is there, so light is always there. And if they're passing the material universe and entering the spiritual realm, then Brahman, I mean...
Let's go back to your first question. Sataputta and Danavira Maharaj have diametrically different perspectives on the first question you asked. Danavira Maharaj is a literalist who takes it just as you said, there's one sun in the whole universe. Sariputta took it that the description of one sun has to do with there's different, like his model of in one picture there's many parts and one story is told over here, another story. So the fifth canto Bhagavatam is describing simultaneously four different things. Simultaneously, it's like here's four balls, catch. And you can't catch all four. You can catch one. Maybe you can catch two. But you can't catch four. So his rendering is that description that says there's one sun in the universe. That's the model of our solar system. And there are different solar systems. That's Sariputta's rendering. I mean, if he was here, he would say, no, that's not what I said. But that's my understanding of what he said. And Dhanavira Maharaj takes strenuous exception to that. No, Prabhupada said, one sun in the universe. Which makes it sound like, you know, from what we just read. But, you know, again, it can be the multiple models, and this is one model in which it's described. I haven't gone there. I haven't, like, read enough about it and contemplated enough about it to answer the first question, so what to speak of the second question, the second part of the question. Where Mahavishnu resides, his body alone is self-effulgent.
Mm-hmm.
When Krishna was trying to hide himself in the storeroom of Mother Jasoda, she could easily find him because he was effulgent. So Mahavishnu is similarly effulgent. It's not like he has to release Sudarshan Chakra and then there's light, because otherwise, you know, his darkness. So how did if that's the case, how is it that when Krishna and Arjuna went and it was there was darkness until he released the Sudarshan Chakra? That's different than your question, how many sons are there? Is there only one son? And, you know, these verses that I very easily read over, had you asked about those, I wouldn't have been able to answer either. It's very, very intricate. Like, okay, during the night of Brahma, this part is like from Swargaloka down, is dissolved in its darkness. But somehow the sun is illuminating the upper part. How does that work? I don't know. Maybe that, maybe says, I don't know. You want to offer something?
I when I was reading the fifth canto, I saw the mystery of sacred universe. Yeah, better picture. So in the beginning, he explains like these different models.
Yes.
The Vedic model, this model, that model of the universe. But I don't know from, I could be remembering wrong, but my sense was that he presented that it was one sun for even
the whole universe.
The Vedic model. And the other thing that you were just speaking about, like how this darkness. Other side. Isn't there a description in the fifth canto of some name for that?
You know,
like a mountain that beyond which the sunlight doesn't, sun rays don't go, and then the other side is actually the hellish planets. It's like fully dark. I forget the name of that mountain.
No. Loka Mountain. And then beyond that is the Antariksha, where it's darkness. What Sariputta says is, without the use of a telescope, that's what the eye can see, and beyond that is what the eye can't see. So, whether it's literally a mountain that blocks the sun, or because the eye can't see, therefore it's a mountain beyond which there is darkness. Next. Anything else? Yes.
Whereas we are talking about time and the eternal time being in the background, it looks somewhat similar to Yogamaya and Mahamaya, because the material energy puts the living entities under illusion, whereas same thing happens with the time that we
it's
know.
In that sense it's similar, because time is an agent of Maya. We don't have Maya or illusion without time. We need time for Maya, or to generate, or to move matter and make it appear to be real. But in the background is eternal time, where there isn't beginning, middle, and end. It's eternal. So it's not one-to-one correlation, but there's some similarity. Okay. Until we meet again tomorrow morning. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.